The number you have dialed, 4880000, has been disconnected. 2184880000 has been disconnected.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Manny Butts been here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined by Kyle.
Hi.
Out in Signal Land, we have Rapti Firefly.
Good evening.
We have Gila.
Good evening.
And we have Alex.
You do. Good evening.
Well, a lot going on. We're going to try and get through this as quickly as possible. First, a programming note. Next week, we will be doing the call-in show, the monthly call-in show, as it is the 1st of July. And we will not be doing overtime on YouTube. That's next week. We are doing overtime on YouTube this week at 8 p.m. on Channel 2600. So feel free to join us there. You might have seen some news floating around earlier concerning next or this summer's HOPE conference and frustration that the organizers have been having dealing with AI companies. This is a frustration I think we're all feeling to some degree. But in particular, when you're trying to have a dialogue, you're trying to have like a forum, a back and forth, it's interesting to see their habits. And this was a study that was published earlier today. I think it's a study. It's basically this behavior that has been noticed whenever an AI company is being communicated with. I'm going to read you a quote from this this release. In every case, when representatives of AI companies learned that a talk that they were possibly going to give at a conference, at any conference pretty much, would not be allowed to be a mere unchallenged sales pitch, they became significantly less interested. And when they learned that they would not, that audience members would be not only allowed but encouraged to ask questions, the representatives stopped responding altogether. This happened with each and every company contacted. I just want to list some of the companies: OpenAI or ChatGPT, Anthropic or Claude, Meta AI, Google, Gemini, Microsoft or Copilot, X/Twitter, Grok, and NVIDIA with Nemotron. All of these are artificial intelligence companies and programs that many of us use on a day-to-day basis. It definitely is something that is of interest to people. And I think we all want to ask questions. We all want to make our positions known. God knows, they come in and they copy all kinds of data that we produce, content that we create. They take it, they use it to train their artificial intelligence models to get better at what they do. They don't ask permission, they just do this. But they draw the line at actually having a dialogue and listening to possible critique. Hey, who knows? Maybe all the questions would have been nice questions. But I think they have a sense that most people aren't going to be very happy to talk to them. I don't know. What do you guys think about this? Is it naive to expect companies that are making a ton of money and changing the direction of every aspect of our lives? You think it's naive to expect them to want to participate in an open dialogue, Rob?
I find it fascinating that companies, like an entire sector of the industrial world that is trying so hard to keep itself in the news, to keep itself on, you know, at the forefront of everyone's minds, to force their products in front of everyone, you know, aggressively, to, you know, implement their work in all sorts of ways that do intertwine with our daily lives and, you know, our physical and media environments. A natural response to something that's everywhere, to something that's in the news, is to ask questions about it. It's to be curious about it, is to want to learn more, not just the sales pitches, but what's actually going on and what people who know more about it have to say for themselves. And so, you know, I think the fact that they are aggressively not doing that seems to say a lot about where they're coming from to me.
But also, I mean, E, to answer your question, yeah, I think it is a little naive, and I'll tell you why. They know they're not doing the right thing, and they don't want to put themselves in a position where people are going to tell them that. I mean, look at what happened at all of the college graduations this spring, right? Anytime anybody says anything that's not, oh, yes, thank you, sir, may I have another, they get mad. And I assume that they know that we know a lot and we know better and we're not going to hear them, yes, sir, may I have another. And of course they're not coming. Come on, man.
Oh, but they were. They were until they learned that questions might be asked or questions might be encouraged or criticism might be allowed. And just to answer your point, though, about college graduations, yes, I was very entertained by seeing people being roundly booed whenever they extolled the virtues of artificial intelligence in our future. But that tells me they honestly didn't know. They didn't know that what they were doing or what they were basically promoting was considered bad to many people. You know, and I think it's kind of like this moment that, you know, people who are closed off to the public often just get, like, you know, dictators when they realize, hey, my people don't like me anymore. You know, I'm being booed. People are throwing things at me. It's that kind of revelation that is something dialogue can bring out, and it's all the more painful to hear when you don't have the dialogue, because you exist in this fantasy world. You think that what you're doing is virtuous, and it's not, and everybody knows it, except you're protected from the criticism. So it's not doing anyone any good to not talk about these things, to not have an open dialogue, to not have conflict and arguments. It's super important to do that. Yes,
it's doing them good.
Well, yeah. Go ahead.
That's the thing.
Yeah. Well, look, on the subject, I do think it makes a lot of sense for AI companies who have been the subject of a tremendous amount of mistrust to go where the skeptical humans are, who want to ask curious questions and understand the technology, right? And then shout it to the world, right? But I do think Gila's point is well taken here, and really cogent, because, you know, these companies, they they start talking to you, Emmanuel, and then they dropped off the radar. Is that right? When they heard about the Q&A policy and the recording policy, is that right?
This wasn't something I was involved in, but that's the story I understand to have taken place, that a bunch of them were reached out to, and they were enthusiastic. Then they found out there were questions that were going to be asked, and it's like a formula. It's like a program that runs. If this happens, do this, and in this particular case, it was do not answer anymore.
Yeah, well, I can understand that, too. I mean, if we think about these are massive companies. They get invitations, probably hundreds of invitations to go and speak at various conferences all around the world, probably every month, right? I mean, ours is quite unique, the fact that there was some back and forth, and then it dropped off the radar. I think that's quite curious. I also think that, you know, this can be explained, perhaps, at least in some measure, that, you know, it didn't get past the assistant vice president filter at whatever company this was. There's always a ton of bureaucracy at all of these companies. But I think more importantly, anybody who's going to authorize somebody to go and speak at a hacker conference, well, they're putting their job on the line there, right? They don't know what hackers on planet Earth is, right? Their compliance team or their vice president hears this and they start to think, uh-oh, there's brand risk here. There's going to be potential breaches of NDAs if there are unvetted questions and answer sessions. There's these recording policies that we're not going to like. Like, how does this benefit me? How does this benefit my career? How does this benefit my brand to go and show up at a hacker conference, right? And we all know the dangerous baggage that the term hacker has comes with it, right? This is something we've been fighting against for decades, the misuse of the term hacker. And people still have this negative connotation of the term hacker. And hackers on planet Earth as a conference, I think, scares the hell out of a lot of these brand protection, advertising, marketing, PR types in these big bureaucracies.
You know, I just asked Gemini to weigh in on this. Would it be advantageous to an artificial intelligence company to hold a Q&A session at a hacker conference? And very quickly, Gemini answered, yes, hosting or participating in a Q&A session at a hacker conference like DEF CON, Black Hat, or CCC offers distinct strategic advantages for an AI company. The benefits span security, product development, talent acquisition, and market positioning. It goes on, and I'm not going to read. give AI any more airtime, but the advantages are there. You know, you let fear dictate your decisions, and I think you're going to wind up definitely on the wrong side of a lot of things. Gila.
Yes, but Emmanuel, if you asked it, would it not be a good idea for a generative AI company to come talk to a hacker conference? It would say, no, actually, it's a terrible idea. Because, don't forget, these are the people who built the sycophantic response thing into this tool. It is merely a positive feedback loop. And for them to realize that that's not what they would be walking into, you know, kudos to them for having the tiniest little bit of intelligence to understand that this would not be a terribly receptive audience.
Yes, Alex and Rob.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's something to this in the sense of, I bet you there are lots and lots of people within Anthropic, within OpenAI, et cetera, that would love to come to the HOPE conference, that would love to speak at it and to showcase the technology and talk about it and answer questions about it. But very often, the people that want to speak at these conferences are not the people that are authorizing the speaking at these conferences. They have to go 2, 3, 4 layers ahead. And I think it's mostly a function of bureaucratic inertia and I think fear. And people don't want to be the one who authorized the speaking engagement where the headline then becomes, you know, so-and-so from Anthropic got booed at a hacker conference, right? I think everyone is terrified of being booed at these conferences now.
Yeah, but Alex, with that logic, no company would send anybody. And plenty of companies send plenty of people. So what's different about this particular type of company?
Well, there's a big difference, right? Because these companies, we know, they know that this is a very skeptical audience. This is an audience of people who ask questions for a living. It's part of our identity to question the answers, to understand and figure out how things work, right? So hackers, people know, you know, our mentality, our philosophy. They can figure it out. And that's why I think that's very scary to them. I think difficult questions are very scary to these people. And
Hang on. I'm sorry. That's just too good to let pass by. You're saying difficult questions are scary for people who design artificial intelligence.
Absolutely.
Just wanted to make sure I got that straight. Okay.
You did get that straight, because you're not going to be able to use your large language model on stage to help you answer the questions, will you? Right? Probably not. I would guess not. They'll certainly use them to prepare. But, you know, hope is famous for going off piste, right? For going in weird directions and having interesting topics and really fascinating questions coming in from the audience. That's exactly the type of thing I think that they would want to avoid. But I think rightly so from the brand protection people. Everyone is terrified. And what makes this different, what makes AI companies different from any other company, from a tech company, from an ISP, et cetera, from Cisco, is that these are the guys under fire constantly and the ones that we are all afraid about ruining human civilization and destroying the world. Like, we're not afraid of Cisco routers taking out the entire planet and replacing the human race, but we are a little bit afraid of that when it comes to Anthropic, when it comes to OpenAI, when it comes to Meta. They're not the ones replacing humans, taking away jobs, causing the mass firings of tens of thousands of workers in the United States and around the world. So, yeah, they've got a lot to answer for. Maybe they don't want those questions posed by a room full of very curious, interesting, intelligent hackers.
Well, then I think that's the story right there, that they do not want to have that dialogue. And that should tell you something about their character and their plans. And they should be held up to scrutiny. And maybe people in elected positions can do something about that. Rob, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, coming from the perspective of, like, I've been going to hacker conferences of all kinds since, you know, the previous millennium. I've worked professionally at tech companies from everywhere, from startup to massive. And, you know, I have seen so many companies and individuals bring things that they've made to events like these, you know, hardware, software, toys, whatever. And the ones that have a product are generally really enthusiastic to get it out in front of people and to get questions asked by tech heads and such people, because they can bring a box out on stage and say, you know, yes, it's got the latest retro encabulator and a compass in the stock and this thing that tells the time. And they want an audience member to come up and say, but can I use it to core an apple? And they're like, yes, let me show you how. They are ready and willing to demonstrate a thing they have if they honestly know that they have a cool thing. And the ones who are shy away, I think, from that sort of thing are the ones who basically don't have a product to show off. They have hype. And, you know, at events like this, we don't really do hype. That's when people get skeptical.
Alex, go ahead.
You know, one thing I do want to mention is that maybe there is a way forward here, because, you know, we have some friends at some of these companies right now, by the way, and one friend in particular who was a guest several times, I would say at least two or three times on this very radio show, and I'm talking about Dr. Welton Chang, who was the CEO and founder of the company Pura. And Pura was sold last year, and Welton went to work for Anthropic. And so Welton is one of the strategic foresight leads at Anthropic. And you know, another person there, Michael Breen, who used to be the executive director of Human Rights First. I'm on the tech advisory board of Human Rights First, along with Welton. That's Welton got me onto that board. Welton was on it for a while. But look, we know some people over there. Maybe we should make some calls. And Welton, by the way, has spoken at Hope. I think it was 2 years ago he gave a great presentation there.
Somebody who worked for Anthropic?
No. He was still with Pura at the time.
Okay, well, I'm sure he'd be thrilled to have you volunteer him, but by all means, pursue that if you wish.
Well, look, we can reach out. We've got. My point is that, you know, we have inroads that we can try.
Yeah, right. Maybe there's a way to avoid the assistant vice president filter and the bureaucratic compliance kind of risk-averse culture here.
My understanding is that a lot of things have been tried over the last few months, time is kind of running out, so it's going to have to be fast. But anyway, also time is running out for us here on Off the Hook, so let's move on to some other stories. Continuing with the focus on AI and the tremendous amount of power that is used by their facilities. House Energy and Commerce Ranking Member Frank Pallone of New Jersey today called for Congress to impose a nationwide data center moratorium. A data center moratorium. I like the sound of that. Pallone is now the most powerful congressional Democrat with jurisdiction over energy and environmental issues to support such a policy in the face of public backlash. And yes, public backlash is occurring. His statement came at the beginning of an energy subcommittee session to vote on more modest legislation that seeks to make sure ratepayers don't foot the bill for data center expansion. Americans across the country have expressed concern and opposition to the rampant construction of AI data centers, and Congress should take this political groundswell seriously with a data center moratorium. I don't know, groundwork is being laid for all kinds of reactions to this. The thing that gets me, though, is, if they really wanted to do this, why make taxpayers foot the bill? If somehow you save taxpayers money by building all your damn data centers all over the country, they might actually support it because, people can be fooled pretty easily. I can't believe I'm giving tips to AI companies, but when you make it something that costs them money and in addition is a blight on their environment, well, you've given them two reasons now. It just seems like a really, a stupid move.
Yeah, and the actual repercussions of having a data center around are still being discovered. There was an article in the Times about a week ago about small cities all over the country suing over data centers that were put up and causing all kinds of noise pollution. Infrasound is a big one. Sound at the low end of the spectrum, maybe too low to hear, but that you feel like a vibration when you happen to live near one of these things. There are entire families that are suffering from sleep deprivation and things like that, not to mention the drain on the local infrastructure, air pollution, things like that. And this is something that, there were protections in place at a certain point. The Reagan era EPA was kind of gutted in what it could do about any of this. And of course, the modern EPA is kind of a bad joke. And we're suffering actual consequences from this sort of thing going unchecked, and now's when checks are starting to appear as a possibility, and that raises a little hope, I think.
Something that I think really would be helpful is we find the home addresses of people like Sam Altman, Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, and we file the paperwork to build data centers next to them, Yeah, at least go through the paperwork and, make them show up at hearings, because if they're putting people like us through this kind of hell of having a data center making all kinds of crazy noises, costing a lot of money, destroying the environment, why should they be exempt from that? Obviously, they're billionaires. In fact, Elon Musk was a trillionaire for a little while. It's not right. That alone is not right. And they just seem to get away with anything they want to do. And it's time people react to that. And yeah, this is obviously related to why they don't want to talk or see the public. Same thing with elected officials who don't have town hearings or a Q&A with the people they represent. It's basically not being accountable for your actions or your policies. Alex.
This reminds me very much of the saying, I don't remember from who, but it was that foreign policy is always dictated by domestic politics. And I think here we have an interesting
loggerhead situation here, where you have, on the one hand, on the federal level, everybody clamoring, we have to beat China. We got to beat China. China's in a mad race with American companies to develop AI. They've stolen our technology through DeepSeek, and we have to beat them. And in order to beat them, we have to have more data centers. We need more power. We have to install data centers in every local community around this country so that these companies can get the cooling that they need, the energy that they need. Yet, on the other hand, the domestic political situation is everybody's yelling, well, hang on here. Don't put a goddamn giant AI heat box on my electricity substation and don't start sucking up my water supply for these types of things. And now you have these two principles, the local and the federal, and actually maybe a third principle, the international, this competitive international principle, all crashing into each other at once in public, causing, I think, massive political strife between the federal and state politicians. And I think that tension is really kind of interesting to watch play out. It's a fascinating clash of interests, of cultures, and of money and power. And we're seeing it play out in our lifetimes right here. And I think it's extremely important. You know, everybody knows I live in Manhattan, but I've got a little place out in Pennsylvania, and there was a proposal to put a data center near one of the rivers over there, and the community was really up in arms about it. It's still up for proposal and debate, but nobody sees any real benefit coming from these data centers. If they reduced the electrical bills, or you know, the electric bills that everybody received, if you were charging these companies more so that other people could pay less, maybe there'd be some kind of benefit to that. And I think there are some plans to do that in the works in various places. But for the most part, the burdens certainly do seem to outweigh the benefits.
Well, you know, it's interesting because before AI started to become known in the mainstream, weren't we already facing all kinds of environmental crises? So who on what particular drug would think that this is a good idea that would be accepted by the populace, by people throughout the world, governments? It just seems like a really bad idea that's an obvious bad idea. And maybe they, you know, bells and whistles can, you know, get us to play with the toys a little bit, but it's so obviously something that is bad for us, and I just can't imagine people falling for it. I really can't.
I'd like to imagine people are smarter than that, but just moments ago, someone posted to Lemmy, which is a part of the Fediverse, that they were sitting behind someone on a plane who was using ChatGPT to write something on their laptop. And upon closer inspection, what they were writing was the materials and remarks for a sustainability and climate conference. So
upon closer inspection, was this person leaning over their shoulder?
You know when you're sitting on a plane and you can pretty much see what's going on the screens around you. What's saddest about this story is the fact that I totally believe this happened.
Actually, no, it does happen. In fact, last time I was on a plane, I was looking over the shoulder of the person in front of me because they had an action movie that was taking place. And there were these two guys firing guns at each other, one on the left side of the screen, one on the right side of the screen, but in the middle was actually, they were firing guns at whatever was in the middle. It was this weird kind of semi-transparent creature with this expression of amused detachment on their face. It was the scariest thing because it was some kind of science fiction thing, and these two guys were firing guns at this alleged alien in the middle. And after watching this for a couple of minutes, I realized, oh my God, that's not an alien. That's the face of the person watching the TV screen in front of me. He's watching the film with detached amusement. But for this, that image it haunted me. It really did, because, you know, he was not at all scared of the two people firing guns. And of course they were firing guns at each other, not at him. But yeah, I if you're going to look at people's screens, look at the films they're watching. I wouldn't look at what they're writing. Yes, Alex.
that brings up a very interesting point, actually, and I hadn't thought of it until you amused us with that interesting anecdote there, Emmanuel, because one of the things that jumped out in the recent Iran-United States conflict, I don't know if are we calling it a war yet? I guess it's a war, right? We were at war with Iran, so this war that happened, right? This was really the first time where it became a legitimate target of a military strike to hit a data center. Because data centers, all these data centers are powering kind of military industrial complex technology that's used for targeting, that's used for information, that's used for intelligence. And so data centers in the Middle East, especially over in Dubai, and I think in Abu Dhabi as well, these data centers were targets of military strikes. If we allow these data centers to continue to be built within our local communities, are they too going to become legitimate targets of military strikes? I mean, this is something I think we have to think about at this point. Do we want to have a gigantic bomb target sitting in our backyard or on a river?
Yeah, good question. Something that I don't think people have really thought through.
Yeah, and pertaining to the question of whether we're calling it a war, I like to defer to the wisdom of the crowd on things like this. And on Wikipedia, you can see the article title for this is the 2026 Iran War. Of course, the result is listed on the page as Iranian victory. In case you're wondering whether or not to call it a war, I think it's been decided.
I don't know. Wars usually have fighting on both sides. That's my understanding of what a war is, not just dropping bombs on one side. But they said some nasty things, so maybe that's the other side of the war. I don't know. Anyway, continuing with artificial intelligence, it's always fun to watch the billionaires fight amongst themselves. There's this movie that's supposedly coming out called Artificial, all about the controversial tech executive, Sam Altman. It's supposed to be distributed by Amazon, but apparently some feathers were ruffled when a partnership was struck between Amazon and OpenAI. I'm very confused. Rob, you posted this story. A partnership was formed between Amazon and OpenAI. Altman is CEO of OpenAI. Mm-hmm. And that made Amazon, whose owner is Jeff Bezos, basically say that they're not going to distribute it anymore. Do I have that right?
Well, I mean, the actual course of events is a little fuzzy. Amazon basically, when this deal happened between Amazon and OpenAI, Amazon immediately invested $15 billion in OpenAI, and followed by another $35 billion in the coming months when certain conditions are met, uh-huh. including according to OpenAI's website. And this follows a cloud computing deal worth $38 billion signed by the two companies last year. And so I don't think it's completely out of the realm of possibility that now that Amazon and OpenAI are such good pals, that maybe Amazon decided at that point to rethink whether they wanted to release an unflattering movie about Altman.
Oh, it's an unflattering movie. I didn't see that part of it. It's a biopic about the controversial tech executive. I did not see that it was going to be something he wouldn't be pleased with.
Yeah, I mean, it's got a cast of A-listers and had some buzz going around about it. And I think this is only helping the buzz, although it won't be released on Amazon now. I'm sure it'll find other distribution. And it now has a little badge to stick to it of, like, here's something that they didn't want you to see, which, you know, makes it more interesting.
This is so similar to what's going on in the world of mass media. Where companies are taking over other companies and basically canceling programs that are objectionable to the ruling class. And it's sickening. It's sickening to see how it's all taken over, how what we see, what we read, what we are able to view is all controlled by a handful of people.
I will mention at this point that, you know, our listeners know, but it's worth mentioning again that WBAI is not in any sweetheart deals with massive corporations of any sort or way, shape, or form. And the only thing that keeps WBAI on these airwaves is you, the listeners, and other listeners like you. And if you'd like to go to buddy.wbai.org and throw in what you can to keep us going at a time when it's all the more critical and, you know, it's very plain and obvious that media outlets are under attack. You can help keep this going in an independent manner, in a manner which is not subject to the whims of zillionaires.
And as a member of WBAI, you can participate in elections and help ensure that we stay on the right path. So I think one is coming up, actually, over the summer. So pay attention. It's important. It really is. And no other outlet, I believe, gives you that kind of say, that kind of voice. Okay, and Rob, you also posted this story about Elon Musk's Grok AI firing 2,000 missiles at Iran. Is that true? Grok is firing missiles?
It appears to be, according to a sworn statement, that was given in a lawsuit alleging that XAI's data centers are illegally polluting black communities. Part of the evidence given in this was a sworn statement saying that the administration used Grok to launch thousands of missiles. This is a top defense official, apparently, and the filing does appear to be the first admission from an administration that explicitly says that the government is using not only AI, but Elon Musk's AI to bomb other countries. It's a tool of the military now.
Wow.
Doesn't this just go right to my point that I was making? This story basically supports the very point that data centers, therefore, are war zone infrastructure that are becoming legitimate targets of military strikes in the event of an international conflict. And I do think that people need to have that on their radar as part of the threat model of these data centers. It's not just environmental impact. It's not just that low-level hum. It's the fact that these data centers could be bombed in the event that there is a conflict between the United States and somebody else who has missiles and bombs capable of reaching U.S. soil.
Yeah, but isn't this a case of a data center sending the missiles?
if a data center is sending them, then a data center can be targeted for sending them.
That's legitimate.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not quite at the war games Whopper level of letting the computer pick, you know, send the actual missiles, but the AI products are apparently being used to identify potential points of interest. So it's picking targets, and people are still pushing the buttons at this point. We'll see what happens.
Oh, boy. Okay, looking at this story from 404 Media, our good friends over at Madison Square Garden have compiled a list of activists who have publicly criticized the venue's use of facial recognition technology. Oh, my God. So if you just criticize them now, you get put in the database? This is unbelievable. Yeah, their tweets and comments have been put into a document that is accessible to people inside the company. The news shows that MSG, operated by James Dolan, who we've discussed over the past few weeks, has garnered a reputation for being very vindictive against his enemies, or his perceived enemies, that is not only deploying controversial facial recognition technology, but keeping a list of people that he doesn't like, and people who take issue with what he's doing. I wonder if we're on there. You know, we've been criticizing this for quite a while. The document was included in a 45-gig cache of data that hackers stole from MSG and posted online this month. Hey, so we can check if we can get that file. I want to see if we're in there. We should be. 404 Media apparently downloaded it and reviewed it, so we can ask them. The wake of a data breach would be a good time for Madison Square Garden to stop subjecting its patrons to biometric surveillance. That's according to Adam Schwartz, who's digging himself in even deeper. He's a privacy litigation director at the Electronic Frontier Foundation, and he's already in the document, so I guess he can't be at it again. The document titled Facial Recognition Activist.docx. Sorry. At least try to hide it a little bit. Call it like XYZ or something. Facial Recognition Activist.docx. Okay, it's included in a folder named, anyone want to guess? No? Activists, yeah. List three people who have criticized MSG's use of facial recognition. Evan Greer, director of digital rights group Fight for the Future. Albert Fox Kahn, founder and executive director of the Surveillance Technology Oversight Project, which spells stop, by the way, and EFF's Schwartz. All three of the activists have been quoted in major media articles discussing MSG's facial recognition technology, including in NPR and the New York Times. Well, I mean, WBAI is a major radio station in New York City, broadcasting mere blocks away from Madison Square Garden. I can't imagine why we all aren't listed as well. We should be. And this yet another failing of MSG and James Dolan, who apparently don't know how to turn on a radio while they're cataloging people to ban from their decrepit, decrepit outlets that, well, they just had a championship basketball team. Hopefully they'll be drawn to another place to play instead of MSG. Feel free to jump in, guys, and criticize them so we can get
okay,
listed.
But also, don't forget that the MSG ownership doesn't just own MSG. So I am assuming that the people on this list also can't go to the Beacon Theater, also can't go to the Sphere, also can't go to the, what do they own, the Chicago Theater? Whatever it is.
Radio City Music Hall.
Radio City Music Hall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the document that in question described in this article is from 2022. So I'm wondering and assuming that there might be a more updated version somewhere on their servers.
Well, we didn't criticize we didn't criticize them until after that, so maybe that's why we're not in it. So maybe there's
we gotta work to get into the next iteration of this.
I remember personally criticizing them either that day or, like, the day after. Literally, the document is dated December 23rd, 2022, and I remember being on air and complaining about James Dolan by name and asking if people who were getting facially recognized were not going to be able to go see Knicks games on the road, if that was going to be a condition of not touring, but road games. And yeah, we should be on that list, man.
Yeah. Well, maybe the next people who hack MSG can look for a file called Facial Recognition Activist 2.docx and download that and let us know if we're on that. Yes, Alex, go ahead.
This just seems to be a tactic for MSG, right? Where now they're settling scores with biometrics. That's what this private company is doing, right? And they can get away with it because they're a private company. But, you know, this would be different.
Can they get away with it? Can they get away with invading people's privacy and banning them from just because they don't like what they say?
Certainly. There's nothing that prevents them from doing that. If they are discriminating on the basis of some kind of immutable characteristic like race, national origin, skin color, et cetera, then you have civil rights laws that can come into play. But if they just don't want to let you in, Emmanuel, because you were criticizing them on the radio, they have the right not to let you into their venue.
What if I'm of a particular political party?
Doesn't matter. They can certainly deny you entry on the basis of you being, you know, a pinko lefty.
So they can ban all Democrats if they choose to.
Sure, they could do that if they really wanted to. Yeah, I mean, I don't understand why they wouldn't be able to do something like that. I certainly think, I mean, at their private company, they can open their doors and close their doors to whomever they would like. But the point I'm making, though, is that we're talking about Madison Square Garden, right? It is a private company. They can get away with these score-settling mechanisms using biometrics and going after lawyers who had been part of their law firms that ever sued them and banning everybody from every firm that's ever been associated with any kind of adverse position in Madison Square Garden like they've been doing for years. But, you know, we forget here, though, right? Madison Square Garden, it's a private company, but it sits on top of public transit and public streets and public subsidies to develop this type of infrastructure. So I would argue that there is some kind of hybrid notion of what Madison Square Garden is. It was so central to New York, so central to the Knicks that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, that, you know, maybe there is something to the fact that they shouldn't be allowed to do this because it is part of the public infrastructure of the city as well.
Well, I mean, to me, this kind of action just flies in the face of a free society, where you can, because somebody has a particular opinion, they're not allowed to go to public events. You know, even if they pay, primary rates for tickets and things like that, that just seems like an abuse of a privilege that you have. And I just can't believe we're accepting this as normal.
Well, it's not a matter of accepting it as normal. It certainly is abnormal for a company to act that way and to behave in this manner, right? That's the good thing about this is it is a corporate aberration of bad behavior. If all corporations are doing this, then I think it might become normalized. But I think we're talking about it because it is a really crazy situation. But it can happen precisely because the Bill of Rights just does not apply. Right? You know, that only affects the federal government, right? And think about it, originally,
a key part of you was cut off. The Bill of Rights does not apply. I know you didn't want to end the sentence like that.
Oh, the Bill, yes, I did. The Bill of Rights does not apply to private companies. It only applies to the government itself, right? And in fact, for a long time, the Bill of Rights didn't even apply to state governments. It was only through the doctrine of incorporation, through the passage of the 14th Amendment, that the first 10 amendments of the U.S. Constitution began to apply to the states. Because it originally, as conceived, the Bill of Rights only applied to the federal government. That was the one that was the biggest threat. That's what that was the threat model for the founders, was the federal government. It was King George, right? They weren't thinking about the states. Then through the doctrine of incorporation, it applied to the states. But it never has applied to private individuals or private companies, private corporations. That's why they can get away with this.
Wow. Okay, well, it continues to be disturbing. That's what's going on in the city.
Well, let me tell you this, too. I mean, I think if a company did do something like that, if they tried to ban all Democrats from coming into let's say, for instance, if MSG tried to ban all Democrats from attending the rodeo that happens there every year or something, right? There's probably very few Democrats that go to the rodeo anyway.
I wouldn't make that assumption at all.
I know. I've gone, actually. It's actually pretty interesting. But, you know, let's say there was no Democrats allowed in here, though. I mean, it would be a litigation magnet. MSG would be walking into a buzzsaw. People would be making civil rights issues, you know, viewpoint complaints. I think it would be litigation of historic proportions. Regulators would be looking into this, the Attorney General, too. So I think there are ways, and there's certainly state constitutional issues that could be implicated, and state-based laws. So we're not just talking about the Bill of Rights as regulating this type of behavior, but there's lots of state laws and state constitution provisions that can apply as well.
Okay, while that airplane lands, let me just ask you this. Is not the gathering of all of this private information on us something that's open to some kind of regulation, even if you're a private company? I mean, they're gathering all kinds of data on people and sharing it and using it to find them. It just feels like that's a violation.
Well, you would think, right? But in this country, in particular, we do not have any overarching federal privacy legislation that regulates the use of this type of information, this personal information. If they were collecting personal health data, maybe HIPAA would be implicated. You know, maybe there's some implications for state-based privacy laws about this. But generally, those privacy laws only relate to what happens to companies and their obligations when there is some kind of data breach with respect to the private information that they've been holding. And in many of those instances, nothing happens to these companies once they report to the attorneys general and provide data breach notification letters to all those affected parties. You know, maybe there's some kind of credit monitoring or something like that happens. You know, if you're collecting the information from somebody, you may have to get their consent to process that information. But we don't have something like GDPR that is an overarching law that governs the collection and use of information about people in this particular matter.
So are you saying in those places that do have this kind of legislation in effect, this couldn't happen?
Yeah, that's quite true. Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, and there are a lot of states actually now that have
laws about the collection of biometric data and using biometric data in certain respects. And there's been a lot of lawsuits in places like Illinois over the last couple of years where those laws have been passed. So that would possibly regulate some of this. I don't know what the current state of biometric laws in New York are at the moment off the top of my head, something I'd have to take a look into. But that's certainly another way that these companies could be curtailed from acting in this matter.
Well, it's a fascinating conversation and one that I think we all need to be having. I would like to know, are there other companies out there acting like MSG and tracking people and banning people based on their opinions and their jobs, the companies they're associated with? Maybe even if you're friends with somebody, you get banned and you can't see the Knicks because they don't like your positions on certain things. But what other companies are doing this? Can't just be MSG. There must be, if this kind of thing is allowed, there must be all kinds of companies throughout the United States that are abusing our privacy like this. We deserve to know, and we deserve to have some kind of legislation that protects us from this kind of activity. We have 1 minute left. I'm going to leave it open to you guys.
I just wonder about, in the case of Madison Square Garden, like, they have such sweetheart deals with the city and the state, like huge tax breaks, all kinds of public money effectively funding what they do. Is there any legal argument for granting them some accountability to the public rather than just being able to do what they like with them?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what I was driving at before, too, right? I mean, they're sitting on top of all these subsidies that they're likely getting from the government. Maybe they should be treated a little bit more like a hybrid type of entity since they very much are infrastructure. But I think what's really tricky about this, though, and I think this discussion really hits it on the head, is that, you know, we're not talking about the collection of private information through a website or something like that. We're talking about a company creating dossiers on critics and using information for that particular effect. It's some kind of defensive mechanism, and then they settle the scores with the use of biometrics against these particular people as well. But that's really a gray zone. There's no laws about collecting information about your critics that would regulate that type of activity. Not yet.
All right. Well, I think the number one thing people can do now is ban Charles Dolan from any space that you control. James Dolan. I keep saying Charles. I don't know who Charles is. James Dolan. Ban him, yes. Okay, well, we are out of time. You can write to us, oth@2600.com. We're off the hook. We're on every Wednesday from 7 to 8 here on WBAI. And we are continuing the conversation over on YouTube at 8 o'clock. Go to channel 2600 and join us there. Just go to the link on 2600.com. Next week, we'll be doing a call-in show here on WBAI. And we will see you at 8. We'll see you next week. Please keep listening to WBAI and stay alert and awake. Good night. The people. Virus took on many shapes, the bear, the elk, the antelope, the elephant, the deer, the mineral, the iron, the copper, the coal, and the rubber, the coffee, the cotton, the sugar, the people, the people, the people, the germ travels faster than the bullet, they harvest the mountainside, protect the crops, herd the cattle, the people, the people, the people, the people, the women and children were separated from the men. They are divided us according to the regional filters of their minds. The violence of arrogance crawls into the air, nestles into the geospatial cortex. We are not a conquered people. The compound was on fire.
the glass, but rather see us disappear. Recyclable prayers. The people. This is my body, which is given for you. The people. This is my blood. The people. We are not a conquered people.
Fire.